My name is Courtney Gilbert. I'm 28 years old. Today's date is Friday, January 10th. The year is 2020. I'm here in Santa Monica, California. I'm with Bria Finkel, and she will be telling me some information about her background and her family. Bria, do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay. My name is Bria Finkel. I am 87 years old. I've lived in Santa Monica for 64 years and came here rather when I was young. My grandson, I have four kids that went through the school here and also grew up in Santa Monica, and my grandchildren did too. My grandson is a musician, a very talented young man. His name is Avila Itan Santo. And unfortunately, he had to cancel this meeting, and he apologizes for that. And I can tell you that the picture I showed you, Courtney, is a picture of us going every year to the college event at the time when the kids are graduating. And the family had created a fund, a special fund to commemorate my husband, who was both sitting on their board of directors of the college and also was teaching there. He was, his involvement with the city has been that he was a lawyer for 30 years, a labor lawyer, and we moved to Santa Monica in 1959. I'm having some trouble. I don't know. Something. Oh, there you go. Thank you. While he was teaching there, he got involved. After he retired, by the way, he was a member of the city council and then a judge for many years. And then when he retired, he was asked to come and teach. And so he did. And at the time, he realized the whole DACA issue with the kids, the dreamers in our country, and particularly the ones who were very young when they got here. And so we decided when he passed away in 2015 that we will create a fund that will support the DACA kids. And that's what we do every year. The family comes down or goes to the college and we offer and I must say that we've managed to raise $104,000.
That's a lot of money, Bria. Yes. That's amazing.
And there is a very good person who is taking care of it here at the college, where we are able every year to give a scholarship anywhere from 4 to 6 kids.
Wow.
Yeah. And that covers their year expenses for the study.
That's amazing. Can you talk a little bit more about what education means to you, or at least how you came to develop a relationship with education, and specifically at Santa Monica College? Can you talk more about that?
Sure. I believed education is the most important thing. And by the way, my grandson finished Berklee School of Music in Boston. And he's
amazing.
Really very, very talented. So we also, the four children that we had, we always encouraged them to continue and to be studying the things that they like. Because I am an artist, and I believe that you have to follow your muse. And if you don't follow your muse, you become bored and upset and unhappy. And I think if you do things that you like to to do, hope to do, you have a better life altogether. So education is probably the most important aspect of learning how to live, learning how to do, learning who you are, creating an opportunity for yourself and the community around you. That's essential.
I agree. I want to hear more about this art that you do. All right. I mean, it seems that, like, you encourage that in your family, and you're very proud of your grandson and the work that he's doing and what he believes in. Would you say that maybe you're an influence on him because of your background in art?
I have to tell you a secret. All my children are artists, and all my grandchildren are artists.
Amazing.
Of different types of art.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, who was a very fantastic dancer, very young, and danced with Puke and Trisha Brown in New York, is now a PhD, and she's teaching people how to be artists and how to learn and understand the art world. And one is a musician, a very good musician. She plays ancient instruments like the crumb horn at UCLA. And number three is also a musician, and she said to us that by the age of 42, if she doesn't make it big, she will get a job.
That's fun. Wow. Okay, so it's in your bloodline. What's your medium? What's your muse? What do you create?
That's a good question. I work in many mediums.
Okay.
I started in ceramics.
Beautiful.
And that I did in New York, when I lived in New York for 7 years. And then came to California in 1959 and also did ceramics and taught in different summer camps and different after-school programs. And then the ceramic pieces that were kind of bowls and vases or whatever began to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to refine more the process and refine the material. And I worked a lot with porcelain.
Okay.
And in porcelain, it is a very plastic kind of material, and you can't really throw it on the wheel. It's mm-hmm. difficult. So you have to go into molds. You may create molds of the images or the pieces that you want to do. And I created a mold of my own face.
Beautiful. Wow. So talk a little bit about that process. So you made a selfie.
I made a selfie.
Yeah.
In 1972.
So did you sketch out yourself? Were you, like, looking at a mirror and, like, sculpting at the same time?
No, I had a friend who was the mask maker.
Oh.
And he created a mask of my face,
mm-hmm.
Which I learned in the process how to do that, because then I did a mask of my son and a mask of my friends.
Wow.
And used them also in the porcelain.
That's a nice way to remember someone, really. Yeah. Yeah. I could also see it like being kind of like a kind of interesting kind of like not only just a gift, but I can only just imagine folks playing around with it. And like, hey, I'm you now. So we'll continue. What else were you using to create after porcelain?
After porcelain, I created things that were very, very large and in bronze.
Okay.
And a friend of mine who's a poet offered me a small, tiny pamphlet. And he said, could you read that? That was Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And since I did know Hebrew, I said, I will try. And then he said, could you translate it? And so I did. And that was a Kabbalistic material from the 13th century. Abu Lafia, Abraham Abu Lafia. And he was a rabbi, but he was a real renegade kind of a guy. He allowed women to come to his classes. He allowed Christians. He allowed Muslims. Because he believed that we all have one God, and it wasn't necessary to have divisions. And so he was kind of eccentric. And his poetry is very eccentric. It's very interesting. And he figured out a format or a way to connect with how the synapses of the brain really work.
Wow.
Where if you look on a page, and he created connections into, actually took material from the Bible and put them, it directs you to go to page 26 and line 4, you know, and you find the word that you need, you write it down, and at the end of your search, you begin to see, my goodness, this is really quite amazing.
Yeah.
And so that was about, I was involved with that for about 24 years, and every period, I work in series, so every period of time that I work, I try to get to the deepest space that I can get with it.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And some of the porcelain, by the way, is at the Smithsonian.
It's in the Smithsonian?
Yeah, and I have I am in there.
Wow, what a distinction. What year did that happen, and how did you feel when you found out that that was going to happen?
Actually, the piece that they have at the Smithsonian started moving around the world in 1980. The Renwick Gallery created a show that was really, very interesting called American Porcelain.
Mm-hmm.
And they invited me to partake in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece itself really traveled all of Asia, Japan, Philippines, all over.
Wow.
And when it came back, they asked if we could offer it to them. And I have a collector who said, I will buy it and I will give it to them. And so that was really generous. And the piece is there now in permanent view.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm really interested in knowing how you came to art. Would you describe yourself as a creative child? Were you a self-taught learner? Was there someone ahead of you, maybe another family member, who kind of sparked your interest in art? Or is it just something that was kind of natural? I see you're shaking your head. Yeah.
No, my family was not really involved with art, but there were others. When I look in retrospect, I think my father always created the new menorah for Hanukkah every year.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was a seamstress of our clothing.
Mm-hmm.
She made all the girls' clothing, all the shirts for the men and all this. And twice a year there would be a woman that she would ask to come. And she cut and measured and sewed the stuff, and we learned how to finish.
Okay.
And so there was creativity there, no question. But I don't think there was an emphasis. I didn't put my eye, went to college in Israel and finished when I was about 18 and a half. And I didn't think of myself as an artist. But I remember being really enthralled and impressed with presentations of art that we were getting.
Yeah.
And I was more interested actually in the cosmos. I wanted to be...
I like that.
That was very exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm excited by hearing that, yeah.
So at the time, not many women were involved in that, you know.
Obviously, yeah. And I mean, even currently, STEM is something that we still have to pump up and still have to make sure that women are included, even starting at such a young age, with it being in schools and, you know, trying to make programs available to younger girls so that girls like you who were interested in the cosmos, so.
Yeah, well, it was always kind of, I'm still interested in that. It's not, that interest did not go away.
Cool.
And my work is heavily involved with seasons and time and also transitions of time and all that, all those subjects are very much in my work.
Beautiful. I like that. That's just really fascinating, and I'm excited for you. And I want to ask you, working through all the different mediums and the different kind of subjects that you've pursued, which one has been the most challenging for you, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I'm still working, so I think every time I get into my studio, I am challenged. And now I'm working on ecological. It's interesting to me because the cycles that I spoke about before really are coming back, because my very first exhibition dealt with climate, and not just climate, but erosion of climate. And that was a big exhibition at the high school here at Roberts Gallery. And now I'm working on veneer wood with pastel, which is really a material I've never used before.
How do you feel about that pastel now?
So I keep on challenging myself. I don't know if any particular material was... Well, I worked for 18 years in ceramics, then 24 years with paint, acrylic paint, and bronze. And now I'm working with, you know, creating all kinds of things with veneer. And also these, I call it the Arid Land series. And it really is very interesting because I'm interested in the idea that the wood has a life of its own and creates a time space for itself. And that fascinates me also, working with the art material like the pastel, which I have never done.
Yeah.
Which is oil pastel. So I would say almost every event, because I really follow my bliss in that situation. I don't, even though I did some things that have to do with public art, where it makes you, it demands that you address the issues differently of what you're going to create. I've created two pieces here in Santa Monica, which was... which they live, you know, they're right here. But at the time, in 1982, I began to be involved with the community here. In 1972, I was very heavily involved with the women's movement here in Los Angeles. And in 1982, I realized that my community really needed me.
Yeah.
And I've been one of the founders of the Santa Monica Arts Commission here, and also still involved.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there someone within the community who you kind of view as like a close, maybe comrade, colleague, co-conspirator in art and political things? Just a good friend. I feel like when you do things like that, you always end up, like you said, getting called to a community. And I think that's really special. I think having a group, not only of just like-minded folks, but folks who are just kind of like in and working around and thinking about these kinds of things and doing it together, or at least being aware of each other, is always a good thing. So is there anyone who kind of stands out to you? Or if you have more than one, are there some folks that stand out to you, and why?
It's a good question. As an artist, I work in my studio and I'm all alone.
Right. You know?
Sometimes I have help, but most of the time I'm doing everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go into the community and I sit in the group and we talk, the founding group was fantastic. It was 9 people. Each one represented a different form of art. And we just began to envision what would happen here in Santa Monica if we did have art. Where would we put it? What kind of art?
Yeah.
How do we make things happen? How do we create a percent for the art so we can make? We have enough money to do that. How do we involve the community, the dinosaurs right here?
I love those.
Yeah. I do too. And that was part of my project.
Wow.
That I was involved. But I always was involved with a group. And that when we did a competition here, we had the top artists in the world.
Wow.
Applying. And in fact, the 2 artists applied, the Lalans, and unfortunately both of them have passed away. The dinosaurs came out. But we had people like Siegel and people like Akanchi, and it was a new phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, the very first thing that I proposed to the city in 1984 was creating a park that is not a park, but changes the whole feeling of the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And people would walk 500 yards and be standing in front of another sculpture that deals with the elements, meaning the sun, the water,
mm-hmm.
the power of the water, and so on and so forth. And when you get too involved with the politics of things, it gets hard.
Yeah.
That's, we managed to put in 2 works of art, but still struggling. But
we'll
I hope we get. The interesting thing is that the people that we recommended at the time were really young.
Mm-hmm.
Today, they're the masters in the arts, you know, like Nancy Holt and James Turrell and Ellen Zimmerman. These people are now considered to be really early, amazing artists. And so the city didn't have the knowledge of how to deal with it. And I guess we didn't either, because but we hope that one piece may come back. Maybe Nancy Holt's piece would be installed where she originally wanted to do it.
Okay. That'll be nice, I think.
Yeah, that would be a real gift to the city.
Yeah. We're going to step back really quickly. You mentioned your involvement with, obviously, an iconic moment in history. So can you talk about what it was like in L.A. during that time when things were taking off in the women's movement? What inspired you to get involved? And, if you want to, just kind of compare and contrast things then and now.
That's a good comment, because I did a whole show.
Oh, wow.
Called Then
and Now
of women's work.
Mm-hmm.
What happened then is very interesting, because we all became aware that the museums, which at the time we had just LACMA,
mm-hmm.
and that museum did not show any women whatsoever.
I remember seeing something about a billboard that went up. About saying, like, literally saying, like, where are the women?
Yes. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
It's still true today.
Yeah.
You could say that. But that was the very first impetus to go after the institutions that do not show any women. We did a lot of research. we found that only one person was up, and she was Dorothea Lange. Mm-hmm. Dorothea Lange is a photographer.
Migrant mother, yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And she was, of course, wonderful. But that was all there was there. Mm. And so we started putting a lot of pressure. And the pressure was very important because the LACMA institution gets money from the county. It's Los Angeles County Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. And right now the county gave them $250 million to change the museum around and do other things. So we knew that here we have a moment that we can put some pressure and see what happens. And interestingly enough, until we finally sent our discomfort to the Senate in Sacramento, did they wake up? And then we were able to talk to them. Anyway, what we managed to do is really very important. We created, with the help of LACMA, Donahue, who was the director at the time, was a very smart man. And he started already discussion, seeing what was coming up, in creating a show called 1550 to 1950, meaning that he will go historically back all the way to the 1550 and come to 1950. And that show really blew everybody's mind.
Wow, I can imagine.
It was amazing. So it started right here in Los Angeles, and we have put the pressure on it. At the time, there was also... And this is an event that is quite fantastic. I got a call from a friend of mine who is an architect. Her husband is a filmmaker, very quite well known. They had a little studio in the place where we created an alternative space called Woman Space.
Wow.
And Woman Space was on Venice Boulevard. This was given to us by a couple who had a laundromat. The place was a laundromat. The wife was an artist, and that's how we got the space.
Nice.
And then when after 2 years, we had an amazing... I have a video. I'll send it to you. In fact, the Smithsonian has the video now. And it's really was a fantastic space because we started off by talking to 5 women. Then we talked to 72 women. And then when we opened the doors, within 2 months or 3 months, we had 1,200 women members of this woman's space.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a very big achievement. And I think it speaks to exactly what you all set out to do, but just that need out there for spaces to obviously be open to women and to women who create, to be able to not only just nurture them, mentor them, but... yeah, exhibit them and give them, yeah, a space to be and to be acknowledged.
And it was more important to us to show, to be egalitarian in all that, because mm-hmm. gay women were not shown, mm-hmm. black women were not shown, mm-hmm. and it was extremely important for us to create a space that not only feminist issues and feminist art is being shown, but a variety of it, and coming from all groups.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was on the commission, we created something called the Art Bank, and the deal was that you had to buy 50% of the work by men, 50% by women, a third by minority. And that was very interesting because now I think we would have to change the relationships of the numbers, maybe 60% of minority. But it the point is that we managed to do it. And my idea is now that all institutions in this country should achieve the position or the opportunity for themselves and the artists who produce work, that 50-50 would be shown continuously. You know, you could veer 1% off or 1% on, mm-hmm. depending on what the subject of the show. But that 50-50 is the big issue. Now, because all these years have passed, it's almost 47 years, mm-hmm. and we still have only, at the height of things, 3.5% to 11% women showing.
A lot of work to do. Wow. We have about 10 more minutes left, and I have two questions that I think will fill up that amount of time for us. The first one is, can you tell me about someone you'll always remember? And it can be anyone, a family member, a friend, an artist out there in the world that inspired you. Someone that you'll always remember, and just a little bit on why.
And a little bit what?
And a little bit on why you'll always remember them.
Well, I think my parents were very important to me. Mm-hmm. As I grew up, because I really left them very early. At the age of 13, wow. I left home and I went to agriculture school because I wanted to know how to work the land, how to do all that. But the beginnings has been always full of love, full of concern, full of... And I know there was a lot of suffering going on around because... 1932, I was a baby. I was just born. Mm-hmm. And then by the age of consciousness, so to speak, 3, 4, 5, there was a big, tremendous struggle all over the world. And in Israel, in particularly, because the British were in control.
Okay.
And it was a very tough time. And they just had this great way of raising us with great concern and great... I even remember every hug.
Wow.
And that always keeps me very warm, yeah. very involved with the idea that things are going to shape up okay.
That's amazing. I think yeah. that's exactly what a child requires from their parents.
Yes, yeah. And you have to continue being a child
yeah.
in order to maintain this interest.
Yeah.
and the openness and the amazement and yeah. the learning process.
Right.
Which we talked about.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
That is true. Okay. And like I said, this might be it after this question. What do you feel most grateful for in your life?
Actually living here in the United States in Santa Monica mm-hmm. and having a wonderful husband who left us. But that was a blessing.
Yeah.
Definitely a blessing.
Do you want to talk just a little bit more about him and your relationship and, you know, maybe a memory that you might have of him that always will stick out?
Well, he had a kindness in him that was very special. His closest friends were always people that he admired and also admired him. So it was a combination of give and take.
Mm-hmm.
His mother was also a very important person in his life.
Yeah.
Even though the parents did divorce, but she was quite amazing. And a thinker of her own right, very radical. And that was really a blessing.
Yeah.
That kept me going, and it does keep me going today.
Still. Well, that's amazing. I'm really honored, and I feel very privileged to have been able to speak with you and to learn more about you. And I just want to say thank you, Berea.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.